Beneath Your Heart by Persby, read by Jadesfire. I have told you twice already, I am fine, Taylor said and gritted her teeth. Having three men fussing over her like old aunts left her virtually no time to herself. They simply wouldn't accept verbal reassurances. She had to put on a good face when all she really wanted to do was cover herself with blankets and not talk to anyone. Rodney blinked and stepped back. Taylor thought perhaps her verbal reassurance had come out more sharply than she had intended.
Okay, Rodney said slowly.
Well, good. Right then, I'll just be... And he swirled both index fingers in circles and pointed back the way he came. He turned just before he went out the door and asked, You're sure you don't want...
Rodney,
Taylor warned, and he ducked quickly out the door. Where had her patience gone? Rodney had been gone not 10 minutes before John, in sweats, popped through the door. Hey, Taylor, you wanna...
Yes,
she snarled and rushed past him, heading for the gym. John caught up to her quickly.
I meant go for a sedate stroll around the North Pier, he growled at her as they walked.
Sedate is not how I am feeling right now, Colonel, she snapped. When they got to the gym, she pulled her sticks out and began twirling them, slicing the air with a satisfying, vicious zing. John paused at the door.
I really don't think this is a good idea, he said nervously, his hands on his hips and a worried expression on his face.
Normally, Taylor would have taken steps to assuage his worry, to drive back his fear. This time, Taylor thwacked her sticks together and gave herself leave to ignore it, as she was most definitely not feeling normal.
I am not a flower. Stay or go, as you wish.
She began to stretch against the wall, feeling overbalanced by the new size of her chest, which only irritated her all over again. When she turned back around, John had his own sticks held low.
Dr. Keller
said I could continue to train as I wished. Taylor cut him off. She stepped in quickly and came at him with an overhand strike, which he blocked at the last second. He blinked in surprise at the force of the hit.
She said you should be careful.
Taylor swiped at him again. He blocked it half-heartedly.
I am always careful.
I know that, Taylor, John said soothingly. We worry is all.
I know, John, but I am not fragile, and I know what I am capable of.
Taylor pointed her sticks at the floor and stood relaxed, finally allowing some of her irritation to flow away. John regarded her for a long moment. Then he stepped to the side and began swinging his sticks.
All right, then, if you insist. Ready?
The first few minutes were a solid workout, a rhythm of strike and parry that allowed Taylor to relax, to feel like herself again.
Do not be tempted to go easy on me, Colonel, she gritted out during one particularly intricate combination.
Who said I was going easy? John huffed with a smug little smile on his face, then yelped as he landed flat on his back. Taylor couldn't help smirking down at him. She couldn't keep the satisfied feeling from putting a smile on her face after he got up and finally, finally started to really hit back. She kept smiling as she put him flat on his back 6 more times. The next morning, Ronan appeared at her door with an armful of blankets. Some Athosian furs, a garish purple afghan, and a blue fleece blanket that smelled like Rodney, coffee and his sensitive soap, and a pile of DVDs.
Cadman told me to bring these to you, Ronan said without preamble, and dumped the whole mess on her bed.
Need anything?
Thank you, Ronan, Taylor replied. I am fine.
Shepherd says you have the day off, he rumbled, and disappeared without another word. Taylor turned back to her bed, piled high with blankets. She wondered how Lieutenant Cadman had known her deepest wish, and a fierce fondness spread through her chest. The laptop Rodney had insisted she keep in her quarters was on her bedside table, requiring little adjustment for optimum viewing. She discovered that the serial stories of what the Earthers called television shows, made for great entertainment when curled up under a heap of blankets, although she wondered why Buffy insisted on wearing such ridiculous shoes while fighting.
"News spreads fast," Ronan growled as he settled himself on the couch. Rodney reached for the popcorn and Ronan slapped his hand away. 3 people asked me today if I was the baby's father."
"And what did you say?" John asked, handing another bowl of popcorn to a pouting Rodney before sitting next to Taylor, who arranged herself and her blankets to accommodate him. Ronan shrugged and stuffed more popcorn in his mouth.
"Guess they wanted to know how they should bet."
"Bet?" John frowned. "Oh, please, like you don't know," Rodney said dismissively. At John's blank look, Rodney's eyes went wide and he pointed.
"You don't know? How could you not know? Even I know, and I'm oblivious."
John's jaw tightened.
"Rodney," he warned.
"The who's sleeping with Taylor pool is now the who's Taylor's baby daddy pool."
"What?"
"Apparently it began not long after I joined your team," Taylor told him. When she had learned of it, the pool had amused her more than anything. The Marines had learned quickly not to get too curious.
"You and me are even odds," Ronan smirked as he swallowed his coke, and John's frown darkened into a full-on scowl.
"Oh, we are going to shut that down right now," John growled, and started to disentangle himself from Taylor's feet and the blanket draped across his lap. Taylor quickly grabbed his wrist, not least because John's exit would disturb her hard-won comfort.
"What is wrong? Surely it is harmless."
John didn't relax, but he didn't get up either.
"It's not harmless, Taylor. It's..." He rubbed at his eyebrow with his free hand.
"It's disrespectful. Of you, of me, of Ronan. The fact that I didn't know about it means that they know it too."
"So do it in the morning," Ronan suggested.
John fidgeted briefly before finally agreeing.
"Yeah, okay."
And relaxing back into the couch cushions.
"It'll give me time to think of the appropriate punishment for the ringleaders."
"We could confiscate the pot," Rodney suggested.
"That's not a bad idea."
John turned and grabbed some popcorn from Taylor's bowl.
"Of course it isn't," Rodney said smugly. "I just don't understand why no one thinks it could be me. It could just as easily have been me, right?"
He looked so forlorn that Taylor had to suppress a fresh surge of irritation at the women who had given him such insecurity. She gave him a warm smile instead.
"Of course, Rodney. As easily as John or Ronan."
"Meaning never," John added.
"Ha, very ha," Rodney huffed.
"Hey, what are we watching anyway?"
"These were in my mailbox," Taylor said, and pulled a pair of DVD-Rs from under her blanket. "Rosemary's Baby sounds appropriate, does it not?"
John sat forward again, his whole body suddenly thrumming with agitation.
"Who gave those to you?" Rodney asked quietly.
Taylor looked back and forth between them.
"They had no note. Why? Rodney?"
But Rodney wasn't looking at her.
"That is so not funny, Shepherd."
"Tell me about it. Who would... It's got to be somebody new. No one who's been here long would ever..."
"Can you find them?"
"Absolutely. It's a simple matter of getting into personal... 24 hours, tops."
"Will someone explain?" Taylor asked loudly.
Rodney looked profoundly uncomfortable, but he explained,
"It's a horror movie about a woman who's pregnant with a demon child."
By the time Rodney finished, Ronan had leaned forward too, his body radiating as much tension as John's.
"You're right, McKay," he growled. "That is so not funny."
Taylor tossed her blankets aside and stood up, pacing behind the couches.
"I had thought the betting pool was merely entertainment, but to imply that my child is..."
She pointed at Rodney. "I want their names. I want them on the next mining mission to that planet you call Hell. I want them scrubbing the waste recycling units with very small brushes.
I want them in training sessions for a week," Ronan interrupted.
"Guys," John said loudly, and Taylor stopped pacing.
"We'll find 'em. Don't worry."
"And we'll show them how funny we find their jokes," Ronan added darkly.
Rodney's hovering decreased considerably after the memorable day that he came too close to Taylor while holding his strong morning cup of coffee, and her stomach rebelled all over him. Taylor had to admit she appreciated that Rodney was no longer in danger of smothering her, although she wished she could have gotten the message across more diplomatically. Taylor was surprised to find Major Lorne on the other side of her door. "Major Lorne, is something wrong?"
Lorne shook his head quickly.
No, nothing's wrong.
He dropped his voice to a near whisper and pulled something from beneath his arm. "I know you've been getting a lot of congratulations, and you totally deserve them, and I'm really sorry about the..."
And he waved his hands to encompass the whole DVD debacle and upstart sergeants on stupid dares.
Just here.
He pushed the bundle at Taylor. She couldn't help the surprised look on her face when the bundle unfurled into a very soft pair of grey sweatpants.
"I thought I'd bring you something you might find useful," he said quickly.
"My sister swore she loved her husband's sweats when she was pregnant, and I just figured, you know, the Colonel's real skinny, and McKay would never part with something comfortable, and Ronan probably doesn't even own any, and..."
Taylor finally stopped him with a hand on his arm. "Thank you, Major. It was very thoughtful of you."
Lorne looked at her a long moment.
"You're welcome."
He smiled and turned to go, but turned back after a step. I wanted you to know, we're your people too, you know, on Atlantis." He left Taylor standing in the doorway, hugging the soft fleece to her chest.
"I don't understand. You don't want to know?"
Rodney's voice was quickly climbing into a pitch generally reserved for idiots and crises as they walked to the infirmary for their first glimpse of the baby via a scanner.
"How could you not want to know? How can you wait 5 more months to find out something you can know right now?"
"Mothers have carried children for generations without knowing the sex of the child," Taylor said, in that serene way she knew would get Rodney even more agitated. John and Ronan knew it too, and shed a grin as they walked a step behind. Rodney began gesturing wildly enough that his steps started to zigzag in the corridor.
But that doesn't mean you have to. You can know right now, and you can start preparing."
"Preparing how, McKay?" Ronan interrupted. "How is it different for a boy or a girl?" Taylor hid a small, secret smile as the sound of her men surrounded her.
"The baby's name! How are you going to pick a name? Names are immeasurably important. You're shaping identity when you name a child. You could scar them for life."
"Meredith," John teased.
"Exactly my point."
"Everything looks fine," Keller said reassuringly, as she and Taylor settled into chairs in her office. "Your weight gain is good. I take it the morning sickness is gone."
"I am most thankful," Taylor answered emphatically, causing Jennifer to smile. "It was getting inconvenient."
"Yeah, I can imagine," Jennifer agreed. She shuffled a few papers in her lap, then looked back at Taylor.
"I was wondering, how was childbirth handled on Athos? Did you have midwives, or..."
Taylor sat back and settled her hands over her belly as a wave of homesickness washed through her. "Women were usually attended by other mothers. I confess I was never particularly interested in what went on in the birthing tent."
"Have you thought about what you want?" Jennifer asked.
"For your..." She waved her hand in a little circle. "For when you give birth." Taylor frowned.
"I had not considered it. Surely there are..."
"There's not," Jennifer interrupted. "Taylor, there isn't even anyone who can talk you through this. No one on this expedition has children. None of our doctors specialised in obstetrics, which isn't surprising given the nature of what we do."
"But you have delivered children as part of your training, yes?"
"Well, yeah, but I haven't done it in a while," Jennifer said with a nervous tremble. "I just want you to think about what you want to happen, who you want to be there. If you need us to bring an obstetrician or a midwife from Earth, we can do that, but I need some time to get clearances." Taylor leaned over and covered Jennifer's hands with her own. "I do not wish for a stranger, Jennifer. I want you to be there." "Well," Jennifer said softly, and curled one hand over Taylor's. "That means a lot. But you wouldn't mind if I brought in a specialist?" Taylor smiled. "It would make me happy if you were comfortable." "I know just the person. You'll love her." Jennifer sat forward, all excited energy. "I'll see if she could bring along some books for you, or maybe videos would be better." She trailed off when Taylor held up a hand. "I believe Rodney already has some materials on order," she said, and they both dissolved into giggles. "That is it," Taylor growled and threw her jacket on the floor. The offending garment no longer agreed to zip around her middle, and she had already asked for larger pants twice, pants which fit her belly but sagged in odd ways around her bottom and had legs which were far too long. She tapped her radio. "Colonel Shepherd, this is Taylor." "Come in, Taylor," John's voice growled in her ear. "Colonel, I will not be joining you today," she answered. "You should go without me." "Why, what's wrong? Are you feeling okay?" Rodney's voice overlapped with John's questions. "Shepherd, Taylor, oh my God, please tell me you're okay." "I'm fine," Taylor said, as the dual okays echoed in her ear. "But," she huffed out a rueful little laugh, "I have nothing to wear." "Huh." The sound echoed in both her earpiece and her other ear. Taylor turned to see John at her doorway. He took in the clothes scattered about her and looked her over from head to toe, as if seeing the new shape of her for the first time. "It's all right, McKay," John said into his radio. "She's fine." He tapped his radio off and stepped further into the room. "Taylor?"
"Nothing fits."
Taylor swiped angrily at her eyes and resisted the urge to kick the pile of clothes. "Nothing is comfortable except Major Lorne's sweatpants, which are ugly, and I do not wish to be seen in them. I do not understand why I am so upset about it. I do not cry." She sniffed loudly and winced at how undignified she was being, but she didn't seem to be able to stop it. It got worse when John stepped close and held her shoulders, ducking his head to try and meet her eyes. "Hey, it's okay. We'll find something." He kept talking, even when she grabbed hold of him and sobbed all over his shirt. He rubbed her shoulders and murmured words of comfort and encouragement towards the ceiling, holding his ground against her tears. A week after her disgrace with Colonel Shepherd, after they'd agreed never to speak of it again, Ronan dropped a large package next to her tray in the mess hall. Taylor looked at it only briefly before continuing with her meal. She ate nearly as much as Rodney lately, and more often. "Come on, aren't you going to open it?" Rodney asked. All three of them had goofy grins on their faces, so Taylor gave up and opened the box. Inside was a deep brown leather coat, cut with a high neckline in Satidan style. It was amazingly soft as she pulled it from the box. "Oh," she exclaimed softly, "it is exquisite."
"Ronan made it," Rodney said, and Ronan shrugged. "There's a dress in there too, from Shepherd and me. We ordered some on P4X887, but they only had one ready, and we wanted to give it to you, you know, in case you don't like it. We can change the design any way you want," the seamstress said. "And the Daedalus is here next week. Jeannie helped us order, and we got you some Earth maternity stuff too, seeing as we can't exactly spend our paychecks on ourselves." "Breathe, McKay," Ronan grumbled and poked Rodney with his elbow.
"Yes, well." Rodney finally paused and shot Ronan a dirty look. Taylor dressed slowly. Her men were waiting, but she wanted to savour the thoughtfulness of their gifts. The dress was several shades of yellow, the colour of late summer sunshine, and fashioned out of layers of whisper-soft malice. It gathered and tied below her breasts, above her swelling belly, and was unbelievably comfortable. The coat fit like a dream, skimming open over the sides of her belly as it dropped to the floor. She stepped out from the bedroom into the common area where they waited, and smiled at the stunned expressions on all three faces.
"Well?" she asked.
Of course Rodney would be the first to talk.
"God, Taylor, you look fantastic!"
"Better?" John asked, with a little half-smile that said, "We're still not discussing how you totally soaked my shirt." "Much," Taylor replied, with a nod of her head and a smile of her own that said, "Discuss it and die."
"Thank you."
Ronan got up and walked around behind her, smoothing the coat over her shoulders and tugging at the way it laced beneath her arms. Suddenly she remembered the back rub Ronan had unexpectedly offered the week before, and how he'd carefully rubbed from her hands to her shoulders, skimmed across her back from shoulders to hips. Taylor turned and said, "You were measuring me." The corners of Ronan's eyes crinkled when he grinned. "Glad it fits."
The deliveries from the latest Daedalus run had mostly gone to Rodney's or Taylor's quarters, as they were clothes and other items ordered by Rodney or sent by Jeannie, so John was surprised to find the small shipping container on his bed. It was addressed to all four of them, though. John shrugged and flipped the latches, figuring that the delivery guys felt bad that McKay got all the packages, and John deserved one too. As soon as he saw what was inside, though, he tapped his radio.
"Rodney, what the hell is this?"
"I could maybe tell you if I could somehow connect with your visual cortex and see what you're seeing," Rodney replied immediately. John didn't dare touch any of it, so he couldn't see what the second layer contained. "Books, McKay. There's a box on my bed that's full of books."
"Great!" Rodney's excited shout sounded shrill over the connection. "I was wondering where those were. Bring them over to Taylor's, would you? We're opening everything else. It's like Christmas."
"Am I correct in assuming these books are for you, me and Ronan to read?"
Yeah, some of them, and some are for Taylor. I'm a firm believer in doing your research, you know. Just how many births have you attended, Colonel?"
"I'm not planning on attending this one."
"Just one second." Rodney's voice went quiet as he covered his mic with his hand and asked Taylor to excuse him. A rustle and a door swish later, and Rodney was back on the line, hissing, "Oh, yes, you are. Neither you nor Ronan are leaving me to experience the terror that will be Taylor in labour by myself."
"I didn't sign up for this. I don't want to watch a baby come out of Taylor's..."
John groped for something, anything. "Lady bits. Don't you remember that traumatic health class video?"
"God, yes,"
Rodney confessed quietly, and it made John feel just a little less panicked.
"Okay, then," John said, feeling like something had been resolved, and he wasn't sure what. "She probably won't want us there anyway."
"Oh, I think she will," Rodney said ruefully, and John's stomach dropped again. "Which is why we need those books."
John looked back down at the books on the top of the pile and barely resisted the urge to start tossing them on the floor.
"The caveman's pregnancy companion? That's Ronan," Rodney cut in.
"Naturally," John answered.
"You do realise he doesn't read much English yet, right?"
"Then it'll give him practice."
"What the... My boys can swim?"
"They weren't any of our boys, Rodney."
"It came highly recommended," Rodney shouted into the radio.
"By who? Who could you possibly have asked for advice about this?"
"Caleb," came the reply, quiet and a little embarrassed. That brought John up short.
"Oh," he said.
Rodney sounded defensive.
"He's a good dad, you know. Otherwise Jeannie wouldn't be with him, so he's the best resource I have, and I..."
"It's okay, Rodney," John said. Rodney went silent with a little huff, and John had to loudly shuffle the books so Rodney could hear them. John cleared his throat and went back to looking at book titles. "The Expectant Father. Advice for Dads-to-be. Okay, that looks like..." All the air left him in a rush, and John had to turn and sit down, no more like collapse, on the bed.
"Holy Hannah, Rodney, that's us! We're the dads-to-be!"
"That's what I've been trying to tell you!" Rodney screeched. "It's about damn time you freaked out about this! Seriously, Shepherd, I was starting to think you'd taken one too many blows to the head. I've been freaking about this for weeks!" "Yeah, well, you've been hiding it well," John said, glad Rodney couldn't see his smile. "Really? You think so?"
"No."
John enjoyed Rodney's splutter for a moment, then said, "You win, Rodney. I'll read a book. One book, and you can give me highlights of the rest."
"That sounds fair," Rodney conceded, "given how fast you read."
John snorted into the mic, which he knew Rodney found intensely annoying, and reached over to pull another book out of the box. "I draw the line at My Boys Can Swim, though."
Rodney was busy brushing his teeth when somebody knocked on his door. He stopped brushing and waited, sure that he was imagining things. It was nearly 3 in the morning. Nobody else got up this early, which was precisely why Rodney liked his schedule. Well, that and he could be on his second breakfast when everybody else woke up. So he was surprised when the knock came again, firm but quiet, nothing like Shepherd's usual pounding. He almost dropped his toothbrush when he opened the door to find Taylor standing in the hall and looking beautifully rumpled and frustrated, blankets and pillows in her arms.
"Taylor!"
he squeaked through a mouthful of toothpaste froth.
"You okay?"
Taylor brushed past him with a sighed, "Rodney," and she headed straight for the bed. For his bed! Rodney was frozen in place by the door, watching as Taylor pulled the blankets back and arranged his pillows and the two she had brought into a nest. It wasn't until he saw one of his pillows shoved unceremoniously under her belly that he kicked himself back into gear to protest.
"Taylor, what?"
He held up a finger and headed for the bathroom to spit. By the time he got back, Taylor was fully snuggled in under the blankets, with a serene expression on the half of her face that was visible.
"What are you doing?" he asked.
"I am sleeping, Rodney," came the soft reply.
"But in my bed?"
"It is very comfortable."
"Taylor!"
She finally opened her eyes to level a sleepy glare at him. "You are going to the labs, are you not?"
"Yes, but that's hardly the point."
"Then you will not be needing this bed." Taylor deliberately closed her eyes and pulled the covers over her head.
"It's my bed!"
Rodney tried to keep his screeching masculine and intimidating, but he had a suspicion he was failing when the lump on his bed didn't move.
"What's wrong with your bed?"
Taylor's voice from under the blankets was muffled, but still clearly understandable and sounding like she was explaining to a 4-year-old. "The books recommend I sleep on my side, which makes my hip and thigh go numb, which keeps me from sleeping. Your bed is the most comfortable in the city. Therefore, I'm sleeping here."
"Okay."
Rodney was almost willing to let it go at that. He hated the pins and needles associated with the numb appendages.
"Did you just use a contraction?"
He never did figure out how Taylor had such deadly accuracy with his alarm clock while she was buried under a pile of blankets. Taylor continued to accompany the team on most of their trading missions, where she sometimes let herself bask in the attention. Rodney and John were sometimes taken aback by just how much attention a pregnant woman could garner in the Pegasus Galaxy. Ronan had tried to explain, using terms like walking symbol of hope and future in bountiful breasts. It only seemed to make John and Rodney more nervous, especially when Taylor could barely contain her laughter at Ronan's deadpan, earnest delivery of the purplest of Satidan poetry. It was a 40-minute jumper ride to the Colliat encampment from the gate, which to John spelled a perfect opportunity.
"So I've been thinking..."
"Oh, here we go," Rodney muttered loudly. John resolutely talked over him. "We pull our ranks, and we could finagle the biggest apartment in the tower."
"Finagle? Where are we again?"
"I just figure I'm CMO, you're CF..."
"It's a good idea," Ronan agreed, surprising John with his quickness.
Ronan must have shared a look with Taylor, because she gave a soft, "Oh, John."
"Oh, John, what?"
Ronan asked sharply, and John could peripherally see Rodney's fingers stabbing the air just before it almost audibly clicked.
"You want us to..." We should move in together, John said casually and shrugged.
All of us?
Rodney sputtered. All four of us? You can't be serious.
I have already appropriated your bed, Rodney, Taylor said gently, amusement dancing in her voice.
And I want it back.
We can take turns with the baby, Ronan rumbled. Rodney didn't turn to look at Ronan. He just yelled in his general direction.
I am very particular about my... I call anti-dibs on diapers with number twos, John added loudly, hoping to distract Rodney into agreeing with his proposal.
What's anti-dibs? Ronan asked, just as Rodney said,
Whoa, 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 you can't do that. There's no such thing.
John ignored Rodney and glanced over his shoulder at Ronan. He noticed Taylor was leaning comfortably back in her chair, her hands crossed over her belly and a fond half-smile on her face that said she was perfectly content to let John and Ronan do the negotiating this time. There is now, he told Rodney, who looked ready to roast him over a slow fire. He gave Rodney a teasing grin. You're just mad because I called it first. I'm not changing any crappy diapers, he added for Ronan's benefit. And just what is the US military going to think of their base commander living with his team? Nobody does that. SG-1 couldn't even get away with that, Rodney pointed out, complete with a pointy finger in John's direction.
The US military is a galaxy away, and SG-1 doesn't have a baby, John countered.
We're all three of us the fathers here. How did you think this was going to work, McKay?
Well, obviously, I figured we'd all keep our quarters, and the baby would live with Taylor, and we'd all take turns?
Rodney trailed off hopefully. Ronan snorted. John shook his head.
See, that I have a problem with, McKay. Buying books isn't going to cut it.
He ignored Rodney's indignant huff.
And Taylor deserves better. The last thing I want is to be a part-time father. I won't do that to my kid.
John cleared his throat to cover his surprise at his vehement admission. He stared out the windshield, trying not to feel the three sets of eyes watching him.
Oh, Rodney said softly, managing to roll an I get it, and an I'm sorry, and a yes, let's move in together, into that single syllable.
It turned out that was her last mission, as the Colliatt decided they wanted to keep Taylor. Her belly prevented her from dodging as quickly as she would have liked, necessitating a rather large-scale rescue and more gunfire than she thought was called for. On the jumper ride back home, Ronan sat pressed close to her side, large and warm and with one hand anchored behind her back, while Rodney hovered agitatedly over his console and John flew with a dark, forbidding expression on his face. Their utter silence spoke volumes. Ronan dragged Rodney and John out of the infirmary so Taylor could rest. They all needed to work off some of their anger before they would be fit company for her again, so he was tempted to pull them to the gym. But John was sporting a dark bruise across one side of his face, and Rodney was holding himself more like an old man than usual, so Ronan decided they could do something useful. Neither man protested as Ronan shoved them into the transporter and crowded in behind them. Rodney barely blinked until they were walking down an unfamiliar corridor.
"Where are we?" he asked.
"Picking out our new place," Ronan grumbled in answer, then pointed at the first door. Taylor didn't bother to hide her tears when her men showed her the new apartment that John called the penthouse. It took up nearly a quarter of the level, wrapping around the tower with plenty of room for their growing family. Bedrooms, bathrooms, balconies, several gathering areas, and at least two rooms that would serve Rodney as office space. She linked arms between Ronan and John as Rodney bounced from room to room, showing off all his upgrades and how they'd combined all their things to make it home.
"Do you think you could do that somewhere else?" Rodney snapped.
Taylor looked down at him, sitting at a console in the control room, and quirked an eyebrow.
"Do what, exactly?"
"You're hovering!" Rodney nearly shouted. "You're standing over me and hovering like a puddle jumper, except you're more like a warship now." His circling hands waved to indicate the way she took up considerably more space than she used to. "And I can't work like this!"
"Jeez, McKay!" Kelly Smith chided from the back of the room. You can't tell a pregnant woman how big she is. Get a grip. I have a grip. I have a very good grip. Thank you very much, Rodney muttered loudly, and bent over his computer again. I just don't know what good you think it will do, hovering around the gate room when Shepherd and Ronan are off-world. And overdue, Taylor reminded him. I mean, it's not like we can do anything about it, is it? Rodney looked up at her, his mouth twisted in a sad half-smile. You're due in a month. You're not to go off-world at all, and I have strict orders from Shepherd not to leave either. If they're in trouble, we can't help them. Taylor bit the inside of her cheek, tried to keep her voice calm to hide the frustration she felt. I'm not accustomed to this waiting. I know now why Charon called this a woman's time of confinement. I dislike it immensely. Rodney's snort was drowned out by the whoosh of an incoming wormhole. I'm sorry, Taylor, John whispered. We had a good lead, but then... He spread his hands helplessly. They had been ambushed, barely able to see who was after them before he and Ronan were on the run. One of John's marines hadn't been as lucky. Taylor let her head fall back against the couch cushions. She gazed up at the ceiling, willing the sting in her throat back down. She had done enough crying in the past months to last. To last until she found them. A jab below her ribs brought her head back up, and she forced herself to focus on the men surrounding her rather than the people she had lost. "I am glad you and Ronan are home," she said, and laid a hand on John's forearm. "Not exactly in one piece," Rodney said pointedly, flicking his eyes down where Ronan sat on the floor, his bandaged leg stretched out in front of him. "It'll heal," Ronan grunted. "Seriously, I can't believe you..." "Shut up and watch this," John interrupted Rodney with a wave of his hand and pointed at the screen. The most recent Daedalus run had brought what John called an entire season of football, which had turned out to be a lot of repetitive video, and Rodney's season of hockey was not much different, only the players seemed to move considerably faster. The sound of it was soothing, though, and Taylor didn't mind, so long as they were all together. "Oh!" Taylor couldn't help letting out an exclamation as she got kicked in the ribs again. She looked down in time to see the bump created by the offending foot begin a slow slide from one side of her belly to the other. "Holy crap, that's awesome," Rodney said quietly from his spot beside her. "It's like alien," John agreed. "Looks gnarly," Ronan added. Taylor was a bit surprised to see all three of them with their attention focused on her middle. "You've been hanging out with the Marines too much, Ronan," Rodney said absently. Then he pointed excitedly. "Oh, look, there it goes again!" This time the bump pushed out and slid halfway back before disappearing from view. "Can we?" John asked, and his fingers twitched. Taylor took John's hand and laid it on top of her belly, right where the kicking happened most often. Rodney's hand drifted over, and she placed it next to John's, where their fingers tangled in a fight for space. Ronan's hand slid up from below, splaying wide and warm across the front of her, his fingers brushing both Rodney and John. Taylor held them all, her hands covering all three. They waited, quiet, and burst into laughter when the baby kicked, dancing beneath Taylor's heart. 2 weeks after the ambush that injured Ronan, Taylor felt her first contractions before breakfast. Ronan was stumping around the main room with his cane, and Rodney was in the kitchen griping about the coffee maker when Taylor called out. She hadn't heard John awaken, but he was by her bedside first. "Taylor, you okay?" he asked, kneeling so he could look her in the eye. "Is it a contraction?" Rodney asked breathlessly, landing hard on his knees next to John. "Oh my God, is it time? It's time, isn't it?" He bounced back up and headed back out into the main room, asking the air where he'd left his radio. Taylor breathed out slowly as the pain eased. "I believe they are contractions," she confirmed, but they are merely uncomfortable. How often are you having them? Ronan asked from where he leaned against the wall. They are erratic, she replied, allowing herself a small smile when John started unconsciously rubbing across the front of her belly. But the last three have been 15 minutes apart. John swallowed audibly and pulled his hand back. Okay, he said with forced brightness. That's good, yeah? Three's a pattern. We'll just get you down to the infer... I am giving birth here, Taylor reminded him firmly. We'll just get Keller to come here, then. John switched conversational paths quickly, then stood up, his knees popping like gunshots. She's on her way, Rodney announced, hands waving as he came barreling back into the room. If only we had a midwife, an obstetrician, but... Oh, wait, we don't, because somebody blew up the gate bridge and the Daedalus had engine trouble. Not helping, McKay, Ronan growled and poked him with the end of his cane. Ronan's reach was truly impressive, and Rodney spluttered, grabbing at the cane. And somebody else doesn't trust any of the... I believe I would enjoy a shower, Taylor said loudly, bringing the nascent argument to a halt as she pushed herself into a sitting position. John and Rodney were immediately at her side. By the time they got to the bathroom, she had to remind them repeatedly that she was perfectly capable of showering by herself. "What do you mean, false alarm?" Rodney half shouted. "You said Taylor was in labour." Jennifer looked ready to punch Rodney herself. "Sometimes it happens, Rodney. She is in very early labour. Everything's getting ready for the main event. She's just not there yet. Everything's fine." Rodney drew in a long, shuddering breath and collapsed on the couch, head in his hands. "I'm not," he said querulously. "I can't take this." Taylor patted Rodney's shoulder as she headed to the kitchen for some ice cream. "It's time? Is it time this time? Should I call Keller?" "Every 10 minutes, like clockwork." "How many?" Taylor panted a little. "This is number 7. "Oh, my God, this is it!" "They stopped? Again? What the hell, Taylor?" "I assure you, Rodney, I am not doing this on purpose." After a long morning trying to teach scientists how not to get killed, John popped back to the penthouse for a quick shower before the afternoon's briefings. He stopped short in the doorway when confronted by the sight of Ronan and Taylor on the couch, watching TV. They were sprawled together like lazy college students, complete with blank faces. Ronan's injured leg stretched out onto the coffee table. Taylor leaned back into Ronan, and he had one arm curled around her belly. On a second look, John noticed that Taylor was sound asleep. Ronan glanced up, then went back to watching the screen. John came around behind the couch to see what had Ronan so entranced. A perpetual motion toy was swinging back and forth, then a plastic solar system slowly rotated, then it switched to a bubble toy John hadn't seen in decades, all accompanied by classical music. It was strangely compelling, and John couldn't tear his eyes away. It was almost 2 full minutes before John asked, "Is this that baby Einstein thing?" Ronan simply held up the DVD case in answer. John was late to his briefing, and if Carter thought it odd that he wouldn't say why, well, at least she kept quiet about it. "This is exciting and everything, and don't get me wrong, it's way better than playing 'How would you like your doom today?' But I'm getting really sick of this. Ow!" "You're not the only one, buddy. And I only hit you because Taylor's too far away." "I am going for a walk," Taylor announced, as she threaded her way around the furniture of the main room. Ronan picked up his cane and shoved himself out of his chair. "I'm coming with you. Good for the leg." They paused at the doorway, looking expectantly back at John, who huffed but grabbed his trainers anyway. John lasted halfway out the East Pier before he couldn't handle their pace and took off running, Taylor and Ronan's laughter following behind him. They spent the rest of the afternoon puttering around the penthouse. Taylor was perched on one of the balance balls from the gym, focused on her lopsided, crocheting, so Ronan took the opportunity to watch her. He would never cease to marvel that a woman so pregnant could have such grace, but his sister had had it too in the last months of her pregnancy. At least she was graceful when sitting. Pushing herself to a stand looked awkward, until Taylor's eyes went wide and she grabbed her belly with both hands. "Oh," she said softly. "Taylor?" Ronan asked, not waiting for her answer before levering himself up. Not exactly a graceful process either, even though he'd finally mastered smooth. "What is it?" John picked up the sudden change in tension from across the room. "Everything okay?"
"I believe my water has just broken," Taylor told them, and John sprang to his feet so quickly he nearly overbalanced.
"Okay," Ronan said, just as John asked, "What does that mean?" Taylor levelled a look at John that stopped him in his tracks.
"Right now, it means I am very uncomfortable," she snipped, and disappeared into the bathroom.
Ronan looked over at John, who looked back with a dumbstruck expression. He could see the nervous energy creep back in when John's hand started twitching. It was only a matter of time before he started twitching all over.
Ronan tossed John a radio, which he fumbled and scrambled after.
"You call Keller. I'll tell Rodney."
"Why can't I call Rodney?"
"You think he'll believe you?"
2 days before, Rodney had come running to a panicked radio call from John, only to be greeted by the sight of Taylor and Ronan sacked out napping on the couch.
"Oh, right," John said, obviously remembering his prank.
"Fine, okay, you call Rodney."
Ronan lurched into the kitchen before keying the radio.
"McKay?"
"Yes, what do you..." Rodney snipped, then paused.
"Ronan?"
"It's time." Rodney's voice over the radio was tinny with annoyance.
"All right, ha-ha, very funny. Whatever Shepherd's paying you, it's not worth it. I have had enough with the false alarms and false labours, and I am not going to come running again just so you can hide around the corner and
"Have I ever radioed you before?" Ronan interrupted. He couldn't keep the grin off his face as he scuffed the end of the cane against the floor. Rodney had been working up to a truly spectacular rant.
"Well, no," Rodney admitted. "I suppose that could mean that something's really happening, but then again, maybe Shepherd's just taking advantage of your natural..."
"Taylor's water broke."
"Oh."
Rodney took a deep breath, audible even over the connection.
"Then I guess I'll be right there?"
"Yeah," Ronan said. He was stopped from tapping his radio off by Rodney's voice, almost whispered in his ear.
"She's going to kill us, isn't she? Women in labour can be vicious. Jeannie said she nearly broke Caleb's hand."
"Relax, McKay," Ronan assured him, although he secretly agreed. The idea of Taylor in labour was terrifying. "We'll give her Shepherd first." Rodney arrived 20 minutes later with a flurry of hands and kinetic energy to find all three of them sitting in the living room. He pointed at Ronan as soon as he'd processed the sight.
You told me it was for real this time."
"I am glad you are here, Rodney," Taylor soothed with a broad smile. "Ronan did not lie to you."
"What?"
Rodney had opened his mouth to continue, but he shut it and cocked his head, giving Taylor a baffled little smile.
"Really?"
"Truly," Taylor affirmed, and Rodney settled on the chair closest to where she'd perched back on the balance ball. She took both his hands in hers.
"Dr. Keller has already come and gone. She assures me that labour is indeed progressing, although I am only feeling mild contractions."
"She's 3 centimetres already," John added proudly, like he had anything to do with it.
"Why did Keller leave if you're..."
"She has 2 critical patients, and this could take some time," she reminded him. Rodney sat back a little.
"Oh, well, can I get you anything?"
"Perhaps now would be a good time to finish your chronometer," Taylor suggested, sending her gaze to the side table Rodney had covered in electronic components. She had been quite taken with the idea, seen first in an Earth birthing video, of timing both between and within contractions, so of course Rodney had volunteered for the job. It was only Taylor's hold on him that kept Rodney from bouncing out of his seat, saying, "It's practically done. Give me half an hour." John could tell the contractions were getting more and more uncomfortable. Taylor shifted positions in between each one and went frighteningly silent during them. Ronan and Rodney had both looked at John the first time Taylor ignored them all in favour of a contraction. John had looked back, sure their terror was reflected on his own face. They were all waiting for the yelling to start.
John.
He couldn't help it. John was at Taylor's side before the rest of him could protest the idea.
"I would like to try something for the next one," she said, and without waiting for his permission, she turned and buried her face in his chest, her arms winding around his neck in an odd parody of a high school dance.
John stiffened up, just as Taylor did. Rodney was only paying attention to her and started the countdown. This close, John could feel Taylor panting.
"No, no, 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 no."
He forced himself to relax and pat at her shoulder.
"You're doing fine, Taylor."
She eased back and dropped her arms, but to John's dismay, she didn't step back.
"That position is off the list," she announced crisply.
"So we can..." John started to shift his shoulders away, but stopped when Taylor's eyebrows twitched.
"Or not, whatever you want."
The next contraction saw Taylor in a similar position, only this time she leaned forward more, digging her nose into John's ribs and holding on to his hips. There was nowhere to put his hands but on her shoulders, nothing for him to do but stand there and let her lean on him. Fortunately, Rodney's reminders to breathe worked for him too. Apparently they'd found the magic position, and John didn't know how long he played Taylor's totem pole. Sometimes she sat against the arm of the couch, sometimes she stood, but always she leaned on him. After a while he even kind of liked it, that Taylor wanted him right where he was. At some point, Taylor decided she wanted counter-pressure, or maybe that Ronan shouldn't feel left out, so she drafted him into pushing against her lower back. She kept demanding more until Ronan looked like an odd stork, standing on his good leg and leaning heavily onto Taylor. John was functionally holding them both up, and if he had been his normal self, he would have invited Rodney to hang on his back and complete the team. The mess sent up sandwiches and an oversized card that said, "Happy Labor Day," signed by almost everybody on the base. Taylor didn't notice when John snuck a bite over her head and dropped crumbs in her hair. It wasn't long after the sandwiches that Taylor decided she wanted to be in the bath, and John had never before been so appreciative of the speed of ancient plumbing. The relief on her face as she lowered herself into the warm, churning water was beautiful, and John was distantly aware of how he and Ronan and Rodney all sighed in relief, too. It took almost a full minute before John realized Taylor was completely naked. Fortunately, a contraction distracted everyone else from his blush. When Taylor began whimpering that she couldn't do it, and Rodney suspected it surprised everybody in the room, including Taylor, Rodney signalled to Ronan to call Jennifer while he and John helped Taylor out of the tub.
"You can do this. You're almost done,"
he reassured her, mind racing to try and remember everything he'd read in the past 4 months.
"I think you're in transition. Just hang in there."
John draped her with towels and they made their way to the bed. She crawled on, holding herself up on her knees, and she draped her arms around John's shoulders. John looked only slightly more comfortable with it than he had before the bathtub. He patted at her shoulder and said,
"Okay, you just do what you need to do."
Ronan gimped in and sat alongside Taylor, where he resumed his counter-pressure. Taylor murmured,
"Just rub, please, Ronan."
And she sighed contentedly when he followed her orders. Rodney counted them through 3 more contractions when he noticed how completely Taylor was relaxing between each one. John had apparently noticed too, because just then he asked, "Is she asleep?" Rodney peered around John's shoulder to where Taylor had hidden her face in his neck, then he gently pulled a bit of her hair away from her eyes.
"I think she is,"
he stage whispered, and he couldn't keep the smile off his face. Taylor wasn't sure how long she'd knelt on the bed, but it had been long enough for John to get tired and trade places with Rodney, who was considerably more comfortable. She made a mental note to have Rodney close by if she ever did this again. Finally, Jennifer agreed it was time to push and rearranged everybody. Taylor sat back against Ronan's solid chest, John and Rodney at her knees and Jennifer between her legs. Taylor thought pushing felt far better than it had a right to, considering. "Taylor, open your eyes and meet your son," Jennifer cried, and suddenly her arms were filled with the wettest, most beautiful creature she'd ever seen. "Welcome, Sennett," Taylor breathed as Sennett wailed in tiny anger. "Hey, buddy," John soothed as Sennett waved his fists. "Benedicti, Sennott," Ronan rumbled as Sennott kicked his legs. "Oh, thank God you're here," Rodney sighed and tucked Taylor's hair behind her ear. Much later, after clean-up and nursing and a huge meal, with Taylor finally sleeping, John found Rodney and the baby on the balcony. The early morning starlight softened the city spires, the sound of the sea soothing Sennett in his sleep. Rodney nodded when John stood next to him, not breaking his slight, swaying rhythm. Finally, eventually, John mused, "You ever think about what will happen when they recall us back to Earth?" "What?" Rodney asked sharply, but not loudly enough to disturb the child cradled against his chest. "You're just thinking about this now?" "No, no," John answered quickly. "I've thought about it before. Just, I didn't ask. Look, just answer the damn question, would you?" Rodney shifted, and John could feel his irritation subside. "Yeah, I think about it. Pretty regularly, in fact." John waited. One breath, two breaths. It didn't look like Rodney was going to offer any more, so he prodded, "And?" "And what?" Rodney lifted his chin and glared at John, his peevish look completely at odds with the way his whole body gently moved. "I'm not leaving." "They're going to want to retire us sometime, McKay," John pointed out. "The SGC is going to want us back on Earth." "I'm not leaving," Rodney repeated. "We're not leaving Taylor and Sennett alone out here, and don't you dare tell me that they'll have Ronan, because we both know that's not good enough. This is our family now, Shepherd, and if the SGC wants me back on Earth without them, they can suck it. What about Jeannie?" "Of anyone on Earth, Jeannie would understand this," Rodney said, his chin set. "I'm not leaving our son." Because John had long ago learned to follow where Rodney led, because Rodney's vow loosened something in John that he'd been worrying at for weeks, because the family he'd found was so much more than the family he'd left, John cupped a hand around Sennott's head. "Yeah," he whispered, "I'm not leaving either." The end.